Hello, and welcome to the Q3 2018 Direct Line Group Trading Update call. My name is Molly, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. Please note for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, there will be an opportunity to ask questions later in the call by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you need assistance at any time, please press star zero and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to your host, CEO Paul Geddes, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to our Q3 update. As usual, I'm joined by Penny James and other members of my management team. Hopefully, you've had a chance to read our trading update and have your questions ready. First, let me run you through the highlights. We delivered another robust trading performance in Q3 as markets continued to be competitive. We believe our performance reflects the value of our strong brands, propositions, and customer relationships. Motor and home own brands performed well, both growing in-force policies. Our investments in Direct Commercial and Rescue helped them also to grow in-force policies by 7% and 11% respectively. We're also pleased with the strategic progress we've made in the quarter, and we're on track to begin the rollout of our new personal lines IT systems next year. Overall, our strong trading performance means that we are reiterating our full year and medium-term combined operating ratio target of between 93% and 95%, assuming normal annual weather and no change to the Ogden discount rate. Now for a few words on each of the business areas, starting with motor. At the end of Q3, our view of the year's current year loss ratio hasn't changed materially from how we described it at the half year. At the half year, we said that the market was rational, with market premiums adjusting to reflect the changing Ogden outlook. We also said that claims inflation had returned. During the quarter, market prices showed signs of stabilizing. Against this, higher damage severity has led us to nudge up our view of underlying claims inflation towards the top end of the 3% to 5% range. Weather effects also drove higher frequency this year after a very benign 2017 experience. Against this backdrop, we put through some rate increases. Although not quite enough to cover claims inflation in the quarter, the business we wrote was still at our target loss ratios. Having priced a little ahead of the market, we're pleased that we still achieved some growth. Our own brand policies grew 0.7% compared to Q2, taking year-on-year growth to  3%. Lower average premiums meant that our own brand's GWP was down a little compared with last year, as our price increases were more than offset by a lower risk mix. This mix change resulted from refinements to our technical price models and to our pricing strategy, and to our promotional strategy, I should say. As usual, we'll continue to prioritize our target loss ratios over volume. Moving on to home, we're pleased with the way we traded in Q3. Own brand's policy count was up a little, and average premiums were 1% ahead of Q3 last year. We achieved good price increases on our new business and also improved retention a little in the quarter. Most of the year-on-year variance in headline premium and policies continued to be the runoff of the Nationwide and Sainsbury's businesses. Finally, a few words on the weather in the quarter. At the half year, we talked about the potential for 2018 to be a subsidence year, but I'm pleased to report that our latest view suggests subsidence claims, whilst higher, will not materially be higher than we would normally expect. Next on to Rescue, where it was another strong quarter for our Green Flag brand, which grew premiums 13.2% compared to last year. And in other personal lines, I'm delighted to announce that we've just agreed to renew our travel partnership with Nationwide to continue to supply travel insurance to their bank customers for another 5 years. In commercial, our investment in Direct Line for Business progressed well in the quarter and remains in line with our plans. DL4B grew premiums 7.6% compared to last year. Overall, commercial premiums were flat in the quarter as NIG exited several larger risks where we were not expected to meet our internal hurdle rates, offsetting the premium growth in DL4B. And now for the outlook, where our ongoing discipline gives us the confidence that we can achieve our combined operating ratio target of between 93% and 95% in 2018 and over the medium term, supported by ongoing reductions in our cost and commission ratios. This still assumes an normalized annual weather load and no change to the Ogden discount rate. For investments, we continue to expect investment return of about £150 million this year, boosted by £30.5 million of gains that we recognised in the first half. So in summary, we're pleased with how we've traded this quarter. Markets remain competitive and we maintain strong momentum across our own brand portfolio as we continue to benefit from our ongoing investments. And with that, operator, we'll go to questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad and ensure that your telephone line is unmuted locally. You'll then be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of Thomas Sedle calling from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. First, on home, it seems pricing is flat for you in the market, but you also note that the claims inflation is 3 to 5%. So is it correct to assume that there is quite some margin erosion in the home segment and hence trading environment continues to be difficult there? Secondly, on motor, you said pricing is not quite ahead of claims. Can you give a bit more color of what that means and also maybe tell us why in Q3 a further deterioration happened? I mean, last year you said benign claims. H1 you said return to normal claims inflation, now at the upper end. So what has really changed in Q3 on claims inflation? And finally, on the outlook, you say above 15% return on tangible. Are you also comfortable to reach your LTIP target, which is 17.5% at the lower end? Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take the motor one and pass the other two to Penny. So, what's nudged up in motor is damage, and what's nudging that up is, frankly, paint and parts, and a trend which we've talked about before, which is kind of increasing complexity of cars driving parts costs. So it's just slightly nudged up. We didn't quite price that fully in the quarter, but in the quarter we still hit our targets. The implication being to that is we were slightly above our targets going into the quarter. We had a little bit of a buffer. And obviously we don't comment on future pricing, but our track record and our strategy is to hit the loss ratios that we need to hit. So we're never worried about, we don't like to, but we will always trade appropriately, and if that means a volume consequence, we'll take that consequence. Penny, on the other two?
Home. So it remains competitive, very much as we said at half year, so slightly bifurcated market with lots of people putting price through, but a couple of players at any point in time not doing so. We have got claims inflation running in our 3 to 5% of long-term range. We have priced claims inflation, so we're pleased about that. What we've seen is some risk mix changes that mean the average premium is only about 1% or so up, which is why you're seeing us up overall, a muted amount, if you like. But overall, in pretty competitive conditions, we're pleased to have priced claims inflation and pleased to got a small amount of growth. ROTE, didn't quite catch the end of the question, but I think the essence is we're not changing our outlook on ROTE at all. So, as per normal, comfortable with the target.
Yeah, my point on ROTE was you have a long-term target, which is 15, but your LTIP, as from this year, attaches at 17.5. Yeah. And my question was, are you also comfortable to hit the lower boundary of your LTIP or not just the 15?
Yeah, I mean, just a step in. I mean, 15 is a hurdle. It's a very long-term target. It's something which we use to appraise capital decisions and business decisions. We've long said that and of course the REMCO has to set ROTE targets that are suitably, stretching to the business, and those are set out. So, as Penny said, nothing to look at here. No change in outlook.
Okay, and on home, did I get it right? You are not expecting a margin deterioration. Is that correct?
We've priced claims inflation, so the balance is in risk mix change. So we're comfortable. The margins are are flat or even slightly up.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Thomas.
The next question comes from the line of Edward Morris calling from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. The first one is just if we could drill down a little bit more on margins in motor. So you're talking about claims inflation at the upper end of this 3 to 5% range. I wonder if you can just talk a little bit more detail around average pricing and how it relates to your average premium, because you're mentioning here changes in promotions on PCWs. Can you just explain that a little bit? And really what I'm trying to get at here is some of your peers have been a bit more clear on the sort of current margin compression in motor. Can you just help us to think about the level of profitability of the business you're writing today versus 1 year ago? Thank you.
Okay, so we priced a bit up. Risk mix has come back the other way. So it's down to two things. One is, as we redo technical price models, it just, you know, a consequence of that is you'll get a different risk mix that you're competitive for, and that happens to have gone to a lower risk mix. It could have gone to a higher risk mix. The other thing is, it's kind of our phasing of promotions on PCW. So we're anniversarying a promotion where we did free rescue, which tends to appeal to young drivers who've got slightly less reliable cars. And replaced it with motor legal protection, which tends to appeal to older drivers with lower risk mix. So that's just a kind of a phasing of promotions comment. So none of this is a desire to have a lower risk mix. With everything else being equal, we'd like probably to have a higher risk mix, but it's just a consequence of our science and our promotional strategy. Now, what we have said is, to guide a little bit, is Penny said at the half year, if you remember, that probably a good reference point would be the immediately pre-Ogden level of profitability we're writing at, so the current year loss ratios we achieved in the second half of 16, and that's kind of level which we'd expect to see in the second half of 18.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of James Shuck calling from Citi. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning. James Shuck from Citi. Two questions, please. Firstly, can I just return to your comments, Paul, about just the market behaving rationally? If I look at, you posted 0.7% growth sequentially in brand policy count Q3 versus Q2. You say you've increased rates. Could you just tell me what the risk-adjusted increase in pricing was in Q3 for yourselves, please? But also to square that with the market behaving rationally, because most of the surveys that we see are still showing, you know, quite big declines year on year. I appreciate some of that in new business as opposed to actually achieved rate. But it looks as if it's getting harder for you to generate growth and put through rate increase. So if you just elaborate a little bit on that point for me, that'd be helpful. Secondly, just in terms of prior year reserve development, could you give us an insight into how that's evolving in the second half of the year? You did 13.2 points at H1, 18, so just interested to know how that's developing given some of the trends on the claims inflation that you've mentioned.
Great. Well, thank you, James. So listen, we're not going to disclose exactly the percentage rate. We do that twice a year now. We think we probably don't want to over-disclose. But we did get some rate away. As we said, it wasn't quite enough, and therefore we kind of got back to our target. We were a little bit ahead of it. So we had some trading room for manoeuvre, which we used in the quarter. I think we've said that the market rationality comment, if you remember, we did an excellent chart at the half year, I thought, about saying when there were very clear input cost changes over the last couple of years, the markets responded pretty quickly to those changes. The nature of claims inflation is probably somewhat harder to read because you've got to be, you know, taking severity and frequency and underlying weather. And so, as I think Penny said last time, it may well be that it may well be that the market will maybe lag a little bit. We obviously don't know the direction of the market, but we're not calling anything out in terms of, massive worry about the market, and we're reassured to see the market stabilising, which is a change in direction that it was at the half year. So we're kind of, you know, encouraged by that. Immediate past history says the market's behaved rationally. We will, of course, take our own choices into the market, and, you know, we have a very clear sense of the loss ratios that we want to be writing at. Penny?
PYD? Yeah, you may recall at half year, I said we do the bulk of our bodily injury, sort of large bodily injury reserve reviews in the first half, and the second half generally there's less coming through on prior year development. So, so in effect, no new news on PYD since what we said at half year.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Sami Taipalus, calling from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, morning everyone. A couple of questions. First, on motor IFP growth, you've sort of gone through a period of fairly strong growth here, but am I sort of interpreting your comments right there that you're perhaps approaching the point where you're coming up to your target loss ratios and maybe we should moderate our expectations on IFP growth a bit? And then the second question I wanted to ask was on the FCA and CMA reviews into pricing practices in motor and home insurance. It would just be really interesting to hear your view about how you see this and also potential risks and outcomes. If there's anything you can say there, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're saying on motor is really, you know, it's down to the market to a certain extent what our volumes will be, because we will price to hit the loss ratios that we want to hit, and if you know the market allows, we'll grow, and if the market doesn't, we won't. So you know that the goal seek is the loss ratio, and the outcome is the you know of our competitiveness is the volume consequences. So I think we're pretty clear on that. So it's kind of in a way not down to us. So we'll see. You know, the FCA is a natural next step on their process. It's, you know, we've been working with them and the industry over the last few years on it. You know, I think we've characterized the market, you know, working well for most customers, but, you know, low barriers to switching, very easy to shop around. And, you know, we speak to you know, 80% of our customers each year. Customer engagement's very high. Customer shopping around's very high. So we think it's a market that generally works well, but of course, you know, the question is, are there some customers for whom it works less well? Obviously, this isn't a new topic. We've been, you know, really on this case for a number of years. And actually, it's encouraging to see that in the Dear CEO letter, all the things they set out doing were well advanced. Actually, I'm doing all that stuff ourselves already. So none of that's a surprise. So I think we just have to wait and see, you know, where the market study comes out. We like the fact that it's, you know, evidence-based. It reflects the, you know, complexity of the market. And, you know, there will be a desire to see, is there a different market model, thinking more generally, that could work even better than the current one? And, you know, we'll wait and see the outcome of that. Obviously, as long as it's the market that is a level playing field, we'll deploy our assets into that market and see how we do. But, you know, it's a considered, thoughtful process, and we kind of overall welcome it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Andrew Sinclair, calling from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and morning, everyone. Just a couple left from me. Just on subsidence claims, firstly, you're saying you don't expect it to be materially above normal expectations. Just wonder if you can give us any more about how you've managed to keep such claims to manageable levels and whether you see any material risk of delayed reporting of such claims. Secondly, just on the competitive motor market, how much temporary effect in the quarter did you see from competitors preemptively allowing for things like whiplash reform and then backing that out after the delays, I suppose fairly early in Q3? Thanks.
Yeah, good. Yeah, we don't think whiplash kind of figured really in it, because it was at the time it was announced it was going to be delayed, it wasn't within the 12-month lead-in period, so or it's just the very margins of it. So we don't think that's a factor. Substance or subsidence, we've been debating how to pronounce it this morning.
Hi, yes, subs, I'll stick to subs. Look, I mean, we've seen a small uptick in the frequency, but not as dramatic as sort of full event levels. And we reserve a fair amount, we allow for a normal level of subsidence anyway. So we think, you know, there'll be a small uptick, but not material, you know, single-digit millions.
Much appreciated. Thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Greg Paterson, caller from KBW. Please go ahead.
Hi, Greg.
You all well, I hope. just have three questions. Just catch up.
Greg, unusually, we can't hear you very well. Could you speak up a bit?
Can you hear me? I want to catch up on the other lines. Could you give us a feel for rates versus inflation in your commercial book, in your rescue and other personal lines book, and in the home partners book, please?
Yeah. Which we go first with? I think rescue is kind of a little bit volatile because obviously weather's an impact. So, and generally, as cars are getting more reliable, frequency is going down, but severity is going up because cars are more complex. So it's a little bit of the same thing as we see in the garages on damage. But generally, we're pleased with the profitability of rescue, and we're particularly pleased with the growth of rescue. So everything that we've talked about. I think commercial, we're extremely focused on pricing claims inflation. You'll have seen that in the NIG volumes. We are rate first on the NIG book, and we're happy to take almost a free pass on volumes to the team because we're, really the objective of that business is to get to our target levels of returns. And then the great news about DL4B is that it's a very profitable book. These are very good products, and we're very pleased with that. So we're again happy with the rating environment in commercial, and in the DL4B bit, we're very happy, and then we're very, very rational and value focused in NIG partners.
We're pricing inflation across the whole book, including partners.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Johnny Ewan, calling from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, Johnny.
Hi there. Morning. Just one left for me. So, what's the risk that claims inflation breaks out above this 3-5% long term range? And the reason I ask is obviously we've seen an uptick in the quarter, but also just thinking a bit more about the Nordic markets and Norway in particular, where we've seen just like consistently rising motor claims inflation, mainly due to sort of hybrid and electric cars. But do you think there's a similar risk in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Johnny, I think as we've long said, probably the risk to the market is claims deflation, right? So as long as it nudges up, it's potentially a market size increasing thing, claims inflation, as long as it's not unexpected and you can price for it. I think we do think overall technology, whilst we have some short-term costs from, as we've talked about, things like damage frequency, it should reduce, and it's a good thing for the world, it should reduce the number of, accidents and severe accidents. That's the reason we discount autonomous emergency braking. So we do think, technology will win through and claims will, moderate and at some stage start to deflate. And I think that's the bigger risk. The nature of claims is changing within the mix. As we said before, the more problematic longer-term challenge for the industry is claims deflation, albeit, if people have fewer accidents, that's obviously a good thing for consumers and we welcome it and we'll take some adaption. But it makes our lives somewhat easier if there's high claims inflation as long as it's predictable. And as we said, this is a nudge up. This isn't a kind of unpredictable change, Johnny.
Great, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Dom Mahoney, calling from Exane. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just a couple of questions from me, if that's all right. Just coming back to the civil liability bill and the whiplash reforms. I appreciate this is quite a difficult question to answer, but would you expect your competitors to start sort of pricing in and guessing the claims impact of those reforms ahead of the reforms, i.e. sort of early sometime next year, or would you expect them to wait until April 2020 when the reforms are actually in place and then you can actually see what sort of impact it has on claims experience? And then just a second question related to the comparethemarket.com preliminary decision yesterday. Clearly, it could be bad news for them, but I wonder whether you think there might be any potential negative impact on the insurers themselves, given that these most favoured nation clauses in the contracts presumably were signed by the insurers. Do you think there's any potential risk that the Competition and Markets Authority looks at the insurers rather than just the, the PCWs? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Listen, I mean, as you say rightly, the investigations into competitor market, and you know, I can say we're happy with the interim findings published last week. That's probably all I could, can and should say on that. In terms of civil liabilities, Bill, I think the first thing to say is that we're all, as insurers, committed, and actually, as we've said before, the market behaves exactly in this way, that all the benefits will go to customers, and that's the way the market's behaved, and we've pledged to government to do that, and we will follow that through. And rationally, what that should mean, you know, if it was numerically driven, that would be a gradual, as you, you know, do renewals, it would be a mathematical relationship to how many months would be applying in the new regime. Obviously, that's the limit of what I'm going to say on future pricing, because obviously how people choose to price is up to them. But you know, as we said before, this is not going to stick to the sides of the insurers. Rightly so, this will go to consumers.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Andrew Crean, calling from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. Just two questions. Firstly, is the inflation in motor at 5% a function of the fact that frequency fell rapidly in the third quarter 17, and therefore there's a base effect? And secondly, you talk about your mid-term ambition to maintain 93-95. Could you flesh that out a bit for us, either now or at the full year, in terms of what you see in terms of PYD, because I think you've got that coming down, and how you see that being made up in terms of current year claims and expense ratios?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. So, yeah, listen, let me try and help you on severity versus frequency. So, basically, our 3-5 is severity driven, because we have kind of observed frequency being pretty flat. You, against that, you have kind of better than flat years, which is what 17 was, and you have worse than flat years, which is what 18 looks like it's being driven by too cold and then too hot weather. When we say underlying, we're really talking about severity there, and then obviously you'll get better and worse depending on frequency. Hope that's clear.
So it's not burn, you're not talking burn costs, you're actually just talking average claims.
Yes. Now, obviously, we change. You know, if long term it looked like frequency is going up or going down, we have to reflect that. But so for long term, at the moment, read severity.
Okay.
Penny, on the PY.
On the PY, I'll take the feedback on the year end reporting on the current year and prior years, which we've had that conversation, Andrew, and heard you. I think the other thing to note is it is also supported by kind of reductions in the expense ratio and the commission ratio. I think in the short term, that's driven, as you can see this year and previous years, by commission ratio falls. But there's a lot of work going on at the moment to support expense ratio reductions. We're investing heavily to get cost and agility out at the moment. So that probably accelerates over time in terms of expense ratio reductions rather than all coming through up front. But I will take your point on the wishing for more insights as we go.
That'd be kind. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew.
Before we take the next call, please be reminded, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. The next question comes from the line of James Shuck, calling from Citi. Please go ahead.
Oh, great. Get a follow-up question. Thank you very much. I suppose this is partly a request for full year as well, but if you're able to give any insight now, that would be helpful. But obviously a large part of what you're doing is to drive up the numbers of products that people own, and we haven't really had any update on that since the IPO. Are you able to share any insight now in terms of the proportion of customers that have a motor policy that actually own one or more products? That would be helpful to me, and if you're not able to give it now, then certainly something at the full year, just showing how you're progressing on that, would be very helpful. Second question was just around the timing of the succession plans around the CEO, and when we might expect an update on that, please.
Yeah, thanks, James. So my understanding is the process is on track. You're aware of kind of, you know, my year, and I'm sure the board will try and have succession, aware of both those timings. Obviously, you know, it's getting the right outcome is more important than a quick one. But, the benefit we have is I'm here fully focused, hopefully as comes across today, and all over it. But we've got a good track record, you know, I think of hiring well and managing succession well. So the board's on with that. Obviously it's not a process that I have any particular votes in, but my understanding is it's going to plan, and I'm here for as long as I'm needed through that year, and as I speak now, fully focused on the business. In terms of multi-products, we haven't done a particular update. What I'd probably refer you to is, as we talked about the new systems which are on track, built into those is, making it much easier for us to cross-sell to customers. That's all the way from the kind of CRM capability and the multi-product, capability, things like doing multi-car in different ways. So, we're pretty good at this thing already. We do it by kind of cross-product discounting in a relatively simple way, but we get a much more sophisticated tool set. And I think, we are excellent marketeers. So I think, the new tools and that is one of the areas that we think there should be opportunity in the new systems alongside pricing sophistication, alongside self-service. So that's why we're excited to say that we're on track to bring that in next year, or starting the rollout next year.
But nothing you can share at this moment in terms of the base point for starting into those new systems.
We'll take away the request for disclosure on it. We'll add that to our list of things you'd like us to say.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
The final question comes from the line of Greg Patterson, calling from KBW. Please go ahead.
Just in terms of the Guidewire. When you said it's coming online next year, I assume you start with new business and then move on to renewals. When do you think the process of moving all new business and renewals will be on the new system? Sort of what's the end date?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, it will be done in phases, Greg, to do it safely, but we're not going to hang around, but it will take a couple of years. To get through all of that, we're obviously going to be making sure that we roll out in a schedule which maximises our learning and then maximises benefit realisation. So we have a very sophisticated plan, and we know exactly how we're going to do it in sub phases and phases. So we're really into the exciting part about this becoming real and us having quite detailed plans about the phasing of it. And I think what we'll probably do is tell you as we do it, Greg.
Well, and then therefore, I mean, because we saw Hastings do a sort of point of inflection starting of the amortization of the capitalized software development costs. Are you going to do a sort of immediate start at some date, or are you going to phase in the amortization of this of the CapEx on the system?
So I've been quite exactly how we're doing it, but we will phase it as an outcome of how the value is building and how the rollout's happening is the intention.
Right, so it's not going to be a cliff edge, it's going to be a slow phase.
I'm not a big fan of cliff edges, if I can help it, so yeah.
it makes you feel alive, cliff edges.
I'll bear that in mind.
There we go, that's a...
there's the wisdom for the day.
Thank you very much indeed, Craig.
We have no further questions in the queue, so I'd like to hand the call back over to your host for any concluding remarks.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, everybody. Good to speak to you, and we will be in touch. If we don't speak before, have a good Christmas.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your line.